Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we explore your questions to help you make meaningful connections with teenagers, because no teen deserves to feel alone. Have a question you'd like us to address? Email us at podcast@teenlife.ngo. Now, let's jump into this week's question.
How should we adjust our expectations knowing a teen's brain is still developing? Okay, it's the million-dollar question. How can we begin to understand the brain of a teenager?
I am about to geek out so hard on this
episode.
Oh, yeah,
I was going to say, Carly did a whole lot of research on this one and has been talking it up. So I'll be taking a peer review of seeing if the conclusions you've came to in the
scientifically, your brain is the one that just finished developing.
It's true. This is true.
Which is just wild to think about. So
I'm fresh out of all this development. Yeah. So I'll let you know if your claims are true or not.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think to start, let's just get this out of the way. Teens' brains aren't broken. They're under construction. And I said this before we started, I think as we talk through this, there's a lot of these things that as an adult who works with teens or lives with a teen, you're going to be like, well, duh, I know that about them. But what's fascinating to me is that there is brain science behind what's happening. And it's not always just a choice that they're making, but there's a reason that they're doing the things that they're doing. It's the way that they were made. And so this is going to help explain things like mood swings, risk-taking, decision-making gaps when you're going, why in the world did you do that? And so they're not just crazy. You're not just crazy. And they're not just choosing to make poor decisions. But there's a lot happening in the teenage brain. So I'm not going to geek out too much on the science. However, there really is. Guys, there's some cool stuff here.
Geek out. Do it. Come on.
Okay. So first, the prefrontal cortex versus the amygdala. I'm pretty sure I'm saying those words right.
Sure.
As we know, because I'm sure you've heard this, I've heard this forever growing up, is that the prefrontal cortex, which is planning, impulse control, decision making, is not fully developed until your mid-20s. So teenagers, for sure, is not developed. It's not there. We're not firing on all cylinders.
That's why young men get screwed over on insurance, because until they're 25, it's not fully developed.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Man, I can think of a million examples of even now having, you know, just newly developed my prefrontal cortex of students. You know, this past year we were in Ruidosa and we're sitting at like this church. It's like in the middle of the mountains and, you know, a student comes up. Okay, man, let's go hike that mountain right there. We're right by it. Let's just start walking. I'm like, that's going to take hours. I'm like, this looks like it's so easy. I'm like, I'm not saying we can't do it. This is going to take forever. Like, what do you mean? No. And he's like, oh, well then like, I was like, we have like VBS to do. He's like, well, let's do it like tonight. And I'm like, we would get done at 4 a.m. Like, what are you talking about? And yeah, they're just like, they want the thing and they can't figure out the logistics of it. I'm not even great at that either, but newly developed prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, it's newly developed. You're still working on it. But when it comes to the amygdala, which is your emotional alarm system in your brain, that is fully developed. And so what that means is they are feelers first and thinkers second, maybe third or fourth. So if they, like your example, Caleb, if they're feeling something, they're like, we have to do that right now. Because their prefrontal cortex hasn't caught up to, hang on, is this an idea? Is this a good idea? How long is that going to take? What do I need to take with me? Is this safe? Those things aren't. So they are going to overreact to stress. That might be where you see even some of the mood swings or these heightened emotions. And they're also going to take risks that seem just out of control and crazy to adults.
In the middle of the hike, they're like, what in the world? Milk was a bad choice. You know, they're going to freak out because they didn't quite think about it yet.
Uh-huh.
Why did I have that milkshake?
Exactly. But there's a reason behind it. Then there are also dopamine surges. So dopamine is that feel-good brain chemical. It's linked to motivation and rewards and habits. and they release more dopamine when something exciting happens, and it feels stronger than it does for adults. So that's that risk-taking, thrill-seeking part, which when we talked about vaping a few weeks ago, that's why when I say teens are more likely to get addicted, why it makes a bigger impact on teenagers, it's because this is triggering their dopamine and they're going to feel it stronger, they're going to feel it harder, and then they're going to be chasing that for forever because it's never going to feel that way again. It's just going to continue to go down. And so that is the negative side of it. I will say the positive side of that is this is what makes teenagers want to learn, want to explore, want to try new things, which is very cool because they're getting that boost of dopamine, and that's what's going to help them develop and learn moving forward. So it's not always bad, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but they need healthy outlets for that. We can't just have a teen sit in front of the TV and be like, deal with these dopamine surges, good luck. We've got to come up with healthy risks, whether that's sports, music, being in front of crowds, trying something new, stepping up into leadership. There are just ways that we can do that in a healthy way and develop that that aren't the negative ways like speeding and racing their car down the freeway or vaping or having, I don't know, all-nighters all the time because it feels good.
Yeah, that was my go-to. That's fair. Let's see how long I can stay awake. It's just, it's a stupid idea. I think it also affects their relationships too. But even with, as they get older, the way they talk to people, because it's as they get older, you see the subtle changes of they're not losing their cool every time the question is asked them, and they're not snapping it or they're not. It's almost like their edges are rounding the more their brain develops, and so it's not just decision making; it's also how they interact with people too, which it changes a whole lot. Because honestly, like some preteens and young teens, like, if you were to just kind of like not know all the stuff, some of them are just not nice people. Yeah. That's the way it comes off because their brains aren't ready to say yet, like, oh, you probably shouldn't say things that way because that's mean and not empathetic. And so it's not just decision making. It's also how they interact with other humans as well.
Mm. Right. That's good.
I was going to say, I think ways that we can help students with this, right? Of knowing and acknowledging, you know what? They want to do the things. They might not know the steps to get there effectively. I think one of the biggest ways that you as a parent or adult in their life is not diminish or like snuff out the ideas that they have, right? Encourage that creativity, but help them plan it out. If it's going back to the hike, Caleb, let's hike that. All right, man, let's sit down and figure out a time that, you know, we can carve out hours because that's how long it's going to take, okay, to do that, get snacks, make sure that, you know, we have planned this out. And so that way, you know, you walk with it through them with them instead of just planning it for them. So that way they kind of get a practice of thinking through some of the things that they aren't going to think about and kind of getting it on their radar. And so, but again, I want to, you know, don't snuff it out, you know, but walk with them through it of like, man, this is great. And you'll find yourself, and I have to think this as a student minister, like you'll find yourself in some pretty awesome, fun situations if you do that, right? But it's like, how can we do this safely and not dumb, okay? And I think that's a great life skill for them to learn.
Yeah. This next one is one that I had not heard about, and it's called synaptic pruning and plasticity. And so basically your brain is thinking, like if you're thinking of gardening, unused connections in your brain are getting trimmed away. And then the pathways that are used very frequently become stronger. So that happens in the teenage years. So like I said, if you're gardening, you would pull the weeds so that the flowers can grow bigger and healthier. But what that means is that literally anything can shape teenagers' brains. Relationships, routines, their environment, your parenting, their school experience. And so that's really cool for building healthy habits. But it also means we have to be intentional. That is not a word. Intentional. We have to be intentional. I got there. About forming experience for teens and not letting strangers do it, not letting algorithms do it. And I think that's one of the biggest fears that I have for teens and for my kids of when they're being shaped every single day by what's in their brains, where are they spending most of their time? And for a large portion of teenagers, it's on their phones. Mm-hmm. It's in these apps. And so they're not being formed by you or by school or by their church. They're being formed by what is being pushed to them by people who are trying to sell them and sell to them. And so that's just some things to think about. Go back and listen to our social media episode. Go back and listen to the coping skills episode if you kind of want some more tips on how to walk through that.
That's also why if your teen has experienced some trauma, whether it's, you know, that happens, it's okay that they have. But that's also why some of them probably handle that in a much more intense way when they're teenagers, because that's their brain is pruning to that. So just keep that in mind as well. If your teen has experienced trauma, that's one of the reasons why they're reacting the way they are to that trauma.
That's a good thought. Okay. And then finally, for the brain sciencey things, sleep shifts. We all know teen sleep schedules are crazy. I feel like my schedule still has not recovered from a teenager.
Mine is what it is.
Yeah. But I thought this was really fascinating that around puberty, teens' bodies start producing melatonin, which is a sleep hormone. It's the pill that you take if you can't go to sleep at night, but it's naturally occurring in your body. It produces 1 to 2 hours later than kids or adults. So naturally, physiologically, teenagers aren't going to be tired until 1 to 2 hours after you are, or that's after crazy. They were a few years before. Isn't that wild?
Justification. Yeah. That's justification. Mom yes. and dad, if you're listening to this, do you remember there would be nights when you were like a senior in high school and I was like, I don't know, 13. I don't know. I was a night owl as well. And there would be nights I couldn't sleep. And I would walk downstairs and you'd be watching the cooking channel doing homework. Sure. And we would just watch Chopped together on the Food Network. And it's amazing. It was amazing. But like, right, I think for me, I look at my teenage years into college. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't tired. It wasn't necessarily like I'm just pushing past because I want to rebel. It's just like I wasn't sleepy. And I think it's interesting. When I got into college, I did our like freshman year, like annotated bibliography, which is like a start of a paper, basically. And I did it on sleep debt and sleep deprivation because I was sitting there and I was thinking, I'm going to have all the facts so that way I don't do this. That way I get my sleep. And what happened was I was just staying up till 4 or 5 every night. And now I am burdened with the knowledge of what I did was horrible for my body and will never, never make up any of that lost sleep. It's just interesting what that does to students and teens.
Well, you're so right. It has big consequences. And when you think about teenager schedules, they're staying up later because their brain is telling them to stay up later. They're probably getting up earlier if they're in sports, bands, extracurriculars. They're going all day. They're busy all day. It's not like they're having time to rest. And what happens when teens are sleep deprived is it increases risk taking and it decreases self-control, which maybe are the two things you do not want happening to your teenager who is not getting the sleep that they need.
And you might not know this, but is it like, I think it's commonly accepted that teenagers need more sleep than adults.
Yes.
Because of their, so it's not only are they physically and biologically staying up later, we're making them get up early as well and at a time where they need more sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So let's push back the start date of school. Come on.
Sure, sure. But I read too, if you think about little kids, like babies, like how much their brain and their body grows during those years is out of control. They're growing out of clothes left and right. And I think the only other time that your brain develops and grows that much is your teenage years. And so like you're saying, they need more. Think about how much babies sleep. And then we're expecting our teenagers to do it on
that's why they're always tired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that. I will say there are some positives to all this brain development stuff. There's creativity. They're wanting to take healthy risks. They're very adaptable and resilient. They just are. They learn new things in a really cool way. And the social connection, I remember when I got married thinking, this seemed so much easier when I was a teenager to make new friends and to walk into situations where I didn't know anyone. And as an adult, this is the worst.
Yes.
Like, count me all the way out about having to make a brand new friend or walk into a setting where I don't know every person. But when you're a teenager, you just automatically do that. And so there's some really cool stuff that happens with that, that we lose, unfortunately, as we get older. But as we're kind of talking through that, some ways that we can help our teenagers when their brain is developing, and we've talked about this, I feel like even some this season and other episodes, but help them plan. Like, set goals. Give them an actual checklist of like this, this, and this. But actually, maybe I take that back. You don't make the checklist, but sit down with them and say, hey, I want you to make a checklist, and then let's talk through it. Do you think that's going to get you where you want to go? And let them do that.
And I think like, with like their lack of self-control because they're not getting sleep, which makes them more impulsive. They think first before, or they don't think before acting. They feel before acting. Teaching them, you know, the whole count to three thing, I think has some merit. And, you know, we've talked a couple weeks ago about coping skills. Like, they're just surrounded by noise always. And so they aren't fully even giving themselves time to process some of these things. And so, you know, teaching them self-control to pause and reflect, to be bored, to just think through some of their actions before acting can just, you can't expect them to do it always, but, you know, just kind of help them, equip them to have the most success, I think is kind of our responsibility, because they're not going to do it on their own.
When I would say the safe risk thing, they're wanting to take risks naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Find ways for them to do that. So an easy way is sports, because there is that dopamine release and that dopamine seeking that happens in sports. Maybe it's theater, band. Maybe they find a place to volunteer. If you have a student who, one of our family members used to do just like backflips off of trees all the time, and you're like, what in the world is he doing? Put that kid in gymnastics, or find an outlet for it. Maybe if they like climbing things as a kid, be like, hey, let's look into rock climbing and get some dopamine stuff. If they like to drive their car really fast, find a go-kart track that is super fast. If your local Rockwood go-karts in Fort Worth has super fast go-karts.
Yeah, those are no joke.
No, like, I mean, you get that dopamine surge. So think about, what are some healthy ways that I can help? Like, if you're sitting there going, my teenager is not making smart decisions, why did they do that? Think through, what are they trying to release, and how can I help them do that in a healthier way that's not going to harm their body or someone else maybe? So for some of my tips that I will give for you, honestly, for adults, this is for me too, but especially for teenagers, help them prioritize sleep. What that looks like mostly, limit their screen time at night. The blue light is not helping them out, and it's going to keep them up later. Take the TV out of their room, have them put the phone downstairs, because they're automatically going to want to stay up later. And then if you give them something that's going to encourage that, it's going to make it worse. Caffeine, this is fascinating too. Teens metabolize caffeine slower than adults do. So that means that sodas, energy drinks, which so many teenagers drink energy drinks. I feel like we did an episode on that a long time ago. I'll try to find the link and link it. Iced coffee, it's going to wreck their sleep. It's going to increase their anxiety because they're more sensitive to it than you are. So maybe do a, hey, after lunch, we're not doing that anymore because you need to go to sleep. But I mean, movement also helps with that. Exercising, going on walks, maybe do that together. I think Sarah Brooks talked about going on walks with her son, and that's a place where they could talk because they weren't face to face, they were side by side. And so maybe use that as a twofold way. And then make sure that they're getting the nutrients and the protein that they need, complex carbs. Let's try to work on their blood sugar, because a hangry teen just surely isn't going to help in the focus and emotional regulation situations at all. But now, Tobin, you have a teen. So I do think sometimes it's easy to talk to teens and then catch yourself being like, hang on, maybe take a step back. So like, what are some tips that we can give, like when we're talking to our teens that are like reminding us, hey, there's also things going on that I can't see?
You know, just again, pause, take a breath, don't react the way you want to. We've talked about that ad nauseum. We talked about a couple weeks ago about nicotine as well. You have to be calm because their bodies don't know how to be calm yet. And so you have to model that as a calm person. Name your emotions, name their emotions. Like say things like, you sound frustrated. Like, why is that? Tell me why you are frustrated, instead of what's wrong with you. Like, because if you say what's wrong with you, that puts it defensive. And so just naming the emotions kind of helps you broach that conversation without sounding accusatory. And then offer grounding tools, like we talked about, short walking, deep breathing. The scientific part of that is, and I learned this when I was a teacher, that when your brain is in a fighting state, it is in that front part that's not developed. So it's not only not developed, but that's where our emotions go when we're in a fight or flight. And you want them to, the endorphins to come in, so that way it gets back to the center of the brain where they are developed. Like, that's the science behind that. There's a whole study on that called conscious discipline, which is a terrible name for a study, but it's called conscious discipline, that these people for, you know, years have researched the brain in an education setting. And that is one thing. That's the biggest thing. So taking deep breaths and taking a drink of water, or just having your senses change, it gets your brain from the fight or flight mode to the center state. And then delaying big talks is always really good. I will say this depends on your kid, because one thing I hate even to this day as an adult is when someone says, hey, I need to talk to you about something important, but I'll call you later. I'm not going to think about anything else until I get that phone call. So know your teen in that situation. If you know your teen can handle that, then say, hey, after dinner, can we take a walk? I need to talk to you about something. That my son would stress him out. So I in my household, I know if I'm going to go in, I got to jump in and go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's different for every person.
But I also feel like I noticed this with my son, who feels feelings big. When he is in the middle of high tend emotions,
yeah,
a conversation right then is not going to be helpful.
Yeah. So, that's a little different.
There are times, that is a little different. Yeah. But there are times where you go, you know what, let's take a breather. We want everyone to calm down, because you lecturing them, and my go-to is to go, what are you doing? And then later I go, that was not helpful. And then I have to come back and apologize and go, I was way out of line. You were too. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that in my mind, you were out of line too. But let's, now that we're calm, let's have a conversation. And those conversations go so much smoother than they do when everyone's upset.
I would say when we say delay big talks, I would also add in delay consequences, because this might be an argumentative topic with some people. Like, me and my wife go back and forth on this a lot. But in my head, if my teen, 6-year-old, whoever it may be, is in a fight or flight mode and is frustrated and angry, me saying, okay, that sucks you made that decision, but also here's the consequence and here's the thing that's going to make your life worse. That piles on and makes them go over the edge that may not be necessary. Whereas if you come back later and have the conversation that's more healthy, but then also say, oh, hey, because of this, here's what we're going to do next. And you kind of propose it that way, instead of just okay, you made a mistake, you're the worst, and now you're grounded for a week, you know? And so like that's something that not only puts in them in a worse state, but it also puts a block between you and your kid, because then it just ends up being a harsh moment that, while I do think consequences are necessary and I do think that we can't just let kids skate on stuff, it's, you can do that in a healthier way and in a less emotional way as well.
That's good. And I think too, like, it's looking at ways you might be sitting here thinking like, this is great, but I don't know how to not awkwardly start a conversation or start these things with my students. I'll just be like, just drive right into it. So we have some good conversation starters for you to think about. What's one thing today that felt harder than it should have? If your brain had a pause button, when would you want to use it most? What helps you calm down when you feel overwhelmed? Those things kind of help get the conversation started, get them in a place where they're ready to maybe talk about some of these other things, some of these other problems. One good one is, have you subscribed to the Teen Life Podcast? It's a great one to add. And so that's what we're asking you guys. So be sure you subscribe on YouTube or wherever you listen to your podcast. But we're so thankful for you guys. Glad to have been able to talk. And just, be sure to follow us. Stay up to date on everything we have going on.